So I want to talk about what kinds of options there are for the Palestinians, short-term options, longer-term possibilities that might be realized farther down the road, and also what we can learn from the South African experience and what it suggests about appropriate tactical choices. These are things that you can't issue slogans about if you care about the victims. You have to think them through carefully. So start with short-term possibilities. There's a lot of discussion of this, huge amount. Almost universally, it keeps to two possibilities, two options. One of them is the two-state formula that has overwhelming international support, effectively everyone except the United States and Israel. The second option is that Israel takes over all of the occupied territories, actually what we, since November, ought to be calling occupied Palestine, and I'll call it that. And after Israel takes it all over, there'll be a civil rights struggle and anti-apartheid struggle of modeled on South Africa. Those are the two options. Virtually nothing else is discussed, which is unfortunate because the discussion systematically leaves out the third and most realistic option. That is that Israel will continue with U.S. backing to do exactly what it's doing right now. And it's not a secret what it's doing. First, Gaza is separated from the West Bank. That's been U.S.-Israeli policy since for over 20 years in explicit violation of the Oslo Accords of 1993, which declare that the two are an indissoluble territorial entity. And it's very important to separate them because that means whatever kind of autonomy might ever be realized in the West Bank will be isolated from the outside world. The only real contact with the outside world could be through Gaza, seaport, airplanes, and so on, even to Egypt. So therefore, this U.S.-Israeli policy is really quite sensible and important. Keep them separated from one another. In Gaza, meanwhile, will remain a prison and under siege and regular punching bag in the manner that we've seen for the last 20 years, in fact, really dating back to 1948. What about the West Bank? Well, in the West Bank, the plans are quite clear. They've actually been in process since 1967. They're fairly explicit in internal documents in Israel, more coming out all the time, and also in practice. They've had various forms over the years, but the basic structure is approximately the same. Israel will take over anything that's valuable. That means everything inside on the Israeli side of the, what they call the separation wall, actually should be called an annexation wall, arable land, water resources, the nice suburbs of Jerusalem and Tel Aviv, which happen to be on the opposite side of the border. It'll take over what's now called Jerusalem. It's a huge area, far beyond anything that was ever called Jerusalem. It will take over approximately, probably 40%, maybe 50% roughly, of what's called Area C. Area C is the largest of the regions, approximately 60% of the West Bank that Israel carved out, and it's systematically taking them over. There isn't a very dense population, Palestinian population there, but they're being expelled. Crucially, Israel will take over the Jordan Valley. That's very crucial, for one thing, again, arable land and water resources, but also that completes the imprisonment. It means there's no access to Jordan, let alone any other place. And that's happening in the traditional way, slowly, without too much fanfare, but going on. 1967, there were about 300,000 Palestinians in the Jordan Valley, and now it's down to less than 60,000. About over three quarters has already been taken over, Palestinians expelled, and it continues. The usual traditional methods are being used. Not some is just straight expulsion, but a lot of it is establishment of what are called military zones, from which all people are excluded except Israeli settlers who go back in, and finally their settlements are authorized and linked up to the electrical grid, the water, and so on. Nature reserves, approximately the same. It's called in Israel, pretty frankly now, in Hebrew, Tihur Babika, cleansing of the valley, which is what it is. Its details are instructive. Every couple of days you see something. A couple of weeks ago, 60 people, I'm quoting from the Israeli press, 60 people were expelled, 36 children, 46 dwellings destroyed. That included tents that had been brought in by the Red Cross and other humanitarian organizations to house people who had already been expelled from some other part of the valley. Soldiers checked every vehicle to make sure they contained no humanitarian support. Water in containers was spilled. Point is, make sure they get out. That's the idea. We don't want them here. They're an alien presence in the whole country, in fact, and slowly get rid of them. In addition to what I just described, there are corridors cutting through. One corridor to the east of Greater Jerusalem, to the town of Maale Adumim, was built mostly after the Oslo Agreement under Clinton, by now a pretty large town. I was there in the early stages. The Bedouin, were so-called Bedouin, the people who lived there were driven out, living in tin huts. Now they're expelled further. The town is by now a fairly large town. It's to be connected to Greater Jerusalem. There's a little conflict over there. There's a corridor between Greater Jerusalem and Maale Adumim. Maale Adumim, incidentally, extends virtually to Jericho, its lands. So that essentially bisect. The point of building it was to bisect, essentially bisect the what's left of the West Bank. The corridor, you may have seen some discussion of it, is called E1, East 1. And it's a corridor that Israel's been wanting to develop for about 20 years, ever since Maale Adumim was taking off, because that would complete the bisection. It's interesting that the U.S. administrations have blocked it. When the U.S. tells Israel something, it has to do it. The relations of power are such that order comes from Washington, you do it. Unless it's the kind of order that comes kind of with a wink, which says, you know, here's what we're saying, but you do what you like. And that's Obama, essentially. He's the first U.S. president who has done nothing but wink, first one who has imposed no restrictions, no sanctions on Israel, and that is also true of E1. Up until now, Israel's not been able to build there. It kind of did a few things, like put up a police station or something like that, but it couldn't really develop it. And Obama told them to, you can't develop it, but he told them in his traditional way, you can't develop it, but if you develop it, we're not going to do anything about it. So they'll probably go ahead. That's one corridor. There's another corridor to the north, going to the town of Ariel. Those of you who follow Israeli politics will notice that there's a big surprise in the last election. The Yair Lapid ticket, Yesh Atid, there's a future, won a big section of the vote, mostly the kind of what they call the kind of middle class, sort of moderate vote, you know, folks like us. Lapid didn't say a thing about the Palestinians or the occupied territories, except symbolically. He opened his campaign in the town of Ariel, right in the middle of the West Bank. That's where the second corridor goes. And that's telling anybody who wanted to know, okay, now you know what I am. It's very similar to Ronald Reagan in 1980. He opened his campaign in the town of Philadelphia, Mississippi, carefully chosen because it was the site of one of the major civil rights massacres. And that was telling the country, don't worry about me, I'm going to be a racist thug, which in fact he was. Lapid, I think, is saying the same thing. Otherwise, there's no point opening the campaign in Ariel. North of that, there's another corridor, goes to a couple of other towns. So, in effect, it breaks up whatever remains into cantons, which are more or less unviable. They can survive, but basically unviable. Probably altogether, it'll amount to, say, roughly 40-50% of the West Bank taken over. Incidentally, there are going to be very few Palestinians in the area that Israel's taking over, which means there will be no civil rights struggle and no anti-apartheid struggle. There won't be what's called a demographic problem, the problem of too many Palestinians in a Jewish state. So that alternative, though it's talked about a lot, there's no reason to expect it to happen. No reason to expect the U.S. and Israel to agree to take over all of occupied Palestine. They don't want it. What they want is what's valuable. That's roughly this. They've been proceeding, and every reason to believe will continue to proceed to take it over. No civil rights struggle, no anti-apartheid struggle, no demographic problem. That's the real alternative to a two-state solution, settlement. Those are the two alternatives. The other is not an alternative for the short term.